another beautiful episode of the Billionaire Habit Podcast with me, Stephen Akinta. And today I have an amazing guest who runs, of course, a multi-billion dollar corporation called Nine Mobile. I've known him for the last 12 years. I think we met first 2012.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Mr. Femi Banigbe. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm doing very well.
Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Is this your first podcast?
No, it's not my first podcast, but within the current podcast framework, mm-hmm. I would say it's my first podcast.
Okay. Okay, the way podcast is done now.
Done now, yes.
Okay. But what do you think about it generally? Have you seen a few? Are you a fan of it?
Yes, I am a fan of podcasts.
Okay.
In the sense that, of course, I believe in engaging conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of podcasts that I listen to personally and every day. And one that gives me one information that gives me context in terms of global context and the podcast in the leadership that talks about leadership, podcast that talks about technology, and podcast that talks about finances, global finances.
Yeah.
Of course, podcasts that talk about politics.
Okay, really?
Global politics? Global politics.
Okay.
Because if you operate within a global industry, you have to be familiar with the events that shape the business climate that you operate in.
Yeah.
Before I took over Nine Mobile, I was an entrepreneur myself in the sense that I had my own consulting practice and, I was pioneering a media technology platform.
Okay.
And one of the things I've noticed is that a lot of the content that you find that is educational, especially coming from this part of the world, Africa, has not been properly organized. You find that podcasts and the people who give content and podcasts that are specific on different topics and different aspects is more organized in the Western world.
Very. And it's a big deal.
Yes. It's a big deal. It's for serious-minded people.
It is.
So you can go onto Apple's podcast and there you can find areas of interest, things that you're interested in. You can search for topics, things you're interested in, and then it could bring out all kinds of people from those who make sense for those who are just trying to also to put themselves out there, they wanna be, as I call them.
Mm-hmm.
But in Africa, we never really had a proper organized podcast.
Yes.
And as I was saying earlier, a lot of people that do some of these podcasts are trying to create headlines, right? Trying to create headlines because you want something to go viral so that people can know about you.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is...
And it's a rat race.
It's a rat race. And then I was saying earlier that one of the biggest problems of being in a rat race is that even after you have won, you're still a rat. You're still a rat. And then you have to always go for something more crazier to get more headlines, to get more headlines. And the headline cycle is very short.
True.
And the people... today something that makes headline in 2 days' time, everybody has forgotten it because there's always going to be another story, another story, another story. And one of my friends taught me earlier on, he said, he asked me a question, do you want to make headlines or do you want to make impact?
True.
Yeah, so I believe in impactful podcasts that is transgenerational, podcasts that can educate a mind, podcasts that can uplift people, and podcasts that also can provide historical context to certain realities we have find, whether in our business world, in our political world, in our socioeconomic life.
Yeah. I mean, so who is Femi Banigbe? I mean, tell us about your upbringing. I know you're from Kwara State or you grew up in Kwara?
No, I'm from Kwara State.
Okay.
I grew up in Ilorin. I was born in Ilorin, Kwara State. And
what part of Kwara are you from?
I am from Kwara South. I'm Igbomina boy, as they call it. Isin.
Okay.
I am from the Isin Kingdom, as they call it. Ijara Isin specifically.
Okay.
And then, of course, I grew up in Ilorin, but we used to go home a lot because my parents were quite societal people.
Okay.
And my late father was the king of Ijara Isin.
Ah, so ladies and gentlemen, we have a prince in the building.
Well, typically, I mean, we didn't really take it. Put in our head and say, I am prince, these are prince, that.
Yes,
but the reality is that, you know, we try to stay out of limelight. Personally, I try to stay out of all those, out of that. And for me, I grew up with in an humble background. My mother was a teacher.
Okay.
And I went to his state school, Bishop Smith Memorial College. That's that's a secondary school.
Okay.
Finished secondary school and I went to university and at the Federal University of Technology in Minna.
Minna.
At that time, it was supposedly a third generation university.
Yes.
But that's where we found ourselves. And then I studied electrical and computer engineering.
No wonder.
It was supposed to be a 5-year course, courtesy of Hatsu strike.
Yes.
We got into school in 93 and then we didn't, early 93, we didn't finish until late 98.
Wow.
Then, of course, I did my NYSC in Lagos. And I got into the IT industry. Okay. Incidentally, all the time when ASUU usually was on strike in 96, I picked up my first job in Lagos in 96.
Wow.
So I started as an IT engineer. I was doing all this computer stuff, application support, network support.
Wow.
And I was learning because I didn't want to waste my holidays, which then was ASUU strike. Everybody was just basically having fun and enjoying themselves. The first strike, I was at home. The second strike, I was at home. The third strike, I told myself, hey, listen, you better find something to do.
Yes.
Get a skill.
Yes.
That can help you to sort of build with the kind of career you want to build in the future. So because I've always known I would like to play in the information technology space, even though I didn't understand fully what it was all about.
Yeah.
But I was curious enough to try to pick up a job in that sector. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate. One of the bosses that eventually gave me that first chance, Mr. Yinka Obiwole, gave me a chance to work in this company. He gave me 1 week to observe. And after 1 week, he said he would decide whether I would stay or not.
Wow.
So after 1 week, I went back to him. I think that 1 week is the longest week of studying because I will resume in the office at 8 a.m. in the morning and I'll be by the books. At that time, I didn't even know how to boot a computer. You can imagine, I was a 300 level electrical engineering student. I didn't even know how to operate the computer.
Wow.
But this guy said, listen, I gave you 1 week to prove whether you can stay or not. Wow. So I studied morning till night. Books, and by the time of the end of that 1 week, I actually knew how to do a lot. So the guy was quite impressed to say, wow, okay, it looks like you're ready to learn.
Yes.
So that 1 week became 4 months.
Wow.
And that was how my career in IT started. So first course, got into, finished school, got into the IT sector.
Did you pass on campus?
Yes, I did.
Okay, Rema?
Rema, yes.
You had passed over Rema in Niger.
A campus fellowship. At the time. But
Why didn't you pass after school?
Why didn't I pass after school?
Because a lot of your colleagues, I mean, I had the same experience. I passed out my fellowship too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people after school just started ministry. You know, I mean, we were... In those era, ministry was booming.
I think that one of the lessons I learned earlier on is to be able to discover your purpose and discover where you fit in life.
Yeah.
Even though you may not have a full picture, but your vision is a picture of your desired future, right? But again, your vision always speaks to your purpose, right? Miles Monroe of blessed memory. He's a man that I would say impacted me a lot.
Yeah.
I started listening to Miles Monroe since 92. And yes, so I listened to him since 92. And I remember listening to a message of his in 93. I will not forget February 93. And it was a message on purpose and vision. Was a message on purpose and vision. And that message was so simple, but it basically sparked up a flame inside me. And then that basically sort of set me on the path in which I'm following right now. And as a young boy, all the time Hasu was on strike, I was telling you. And I basically got to discover myself and discover what my interest is, what my passion is, what exactly I want to do. And one of those words that I received in my own spirit is, I believe God was telling me at the time that, listen, I will take you to places and nations in which the initial door of opening will not be your gifting as a minister. about will be your profession.
Wow.
So this was what I held on to at the time. So I realized that I was going to be in the information technology sector. Then nobody knew that much about it at the time.
Yeah, it was new.
But I was very curious around it. I had decided to sort of pursue that curiosity.
Mm.
And that curiosity landed me a job in Lagos.
Mm-hmm.
The job wasn't paying me. The job, as a matter of fact, I think it was being paid 2,000 naira at the time. And
what year was this?
96.
Wow.
2009.
What must have been?
It could only cover half of my transportation fees or my money to get to work.
It was still small money.
So my take home, I used to say to my friends, I said, my take home could not take me
home. Thank you.
My take home couldn't take me home. So I remember that in order to be able to save on the transportation costs, I would walk a little bit to get to so that I can then cut down the bus fare, because you know that if you walk a little bit, you pick up a bus in about Lindy, and then you can then take a bus down, we cut down your costs, and then I was skipping lunch because I couldn't afford lunch at the time.
Wow.
So, but I was really very interested in learning.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the most important things that that I learned. And I was reading a book, I can't remember the author, and the guy said something. He said, you work to learn, not just to earn, because it is those things that you learn.
You work to learn, not just to earn.
Yes, you work to learn, not just to earn. And then it is the things that you learn that will eventually determine what you will earn.
Mm.
So that, for me, I was very, very curious. I was very, very diligent around learning. And because I was also building a career, I wanted to build my own network in Lagos. I wanted to build my own professional network in Lagos and ensure that I can place myself on the path to industry. So that professional network did help me, because I ended up landing myself a job in the telecom sector working for Ericsson. I got this job in Ericsson in 99. In fact, maybe another time I'll tell
Ericsson.
You the story. Yes, Ericsson.
Wow.
And then I resumed this job, and then the job took me to Kaduna, and that was how my telecom career started. At the time. So being in that time, I worked in Kaduna 2000 till 2001, and then GSM was started, and then
Ericsson still in Nigeria?
Ericsson is still in Nigeria, but of course the Chinese have now taken over. The Chinese have reduced their market share.
Yeah.
But at the time when we were at Ericsson got all the GSM contracts.
Wow.
And we were basically recruited to be part of that mobile network team to set up the networks in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, one of my big projects is, of course, supporting Ericsson and network deployment here in Nigeria with Econet Wireless, with MTN, with Nitel. Of course, Ericsson was another learning school. We learned a lot in Ericsson. It's a good training ground. My international career or exposure started at Ericsson. So I worked with Ericsson till 2005. Then I joined V-Mobile, and after joining V-Mobile, I was headhunted to be head of operations at V-Mobile.
Okay.
Shortly after that, Celtel took over V-Mobile.
Yes.
Then I was made the operations director. So
wow.
I was like,
wow.
So it was such a very, I've enjoyed a very fast pace in my career.
You have.
And then got this director job.
Yes.
And then honestly, I wasn't really ready.
Wow.
In my psyche to take on the challenges of that job, because when you are an operations director, it's really not about your technical skills anymore.
Yes.
It's now your ability to manage people, your ability to manage relationship, your ability to do all of that. So I was there till the end of 2007 as the operations director, two and a half years as operations director, and then I ended up in Tanzania in 2008 when Zain took over Celtel. So I got this chief technology officer job in 2008 to go to Tanzania, and then it was a country I've never been before, and then I just thought to myself,
did you move with your family?
No, I didn't move in the first instance.
Yes.
I only moved 16 months after.
Okay.
So I was in a new country.
Wow.
But I knew about, you know, that I was going to work in Africa. So when the time to exit Celtel came, and I started having those challenges at work, you know, sometimes when you're about to exit a place, God somehow finds a way to make that place uncomfortable for you.
Yes.
So that place became very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I knew that my time was up.
Yeah.
So as I was searching for a job and on the internet, I just had in my spirit, it was time for the African experience.
Wow.
So then I started looking out for jobs in Africa. And that was how I got. I landed in Tanzania. So Tanzania gave me an opportunity to go into Rwanda because I ended up being the technology lead for my company to get a license in Rwanda. So we're bidding for a license in Rwanda, and then we're using all our skills and presentation skills and all that. And we got the license. We beat all the big telcos into a third license in Rwanda. At that time, in 2008, everybody was really gushing about Rwanda. Everybody wanted to get into Rwanda. Yeah. Kagame did a good job in marketing the place. And then we got the license. And then 2 years after then, I was posted to Ghana, and I took over as chief operations officer in Ghana. But prior, I was interim CEO in 2012, my first CEO job in 2012.
Of V-Mobile?
Of Tigo, Ghana.
Tigo, yeah.
Yeah, so then I did that job as an interim CEO for about seven months. Then I was then hacked in. Then I took over as COO, chief operations officer, till 2015. Then imagine, I was tired. I was burnt out, completely burnt out. It was like, geez, because starting from 2005 till 2015, I was doing my executive management job was around that time. So you can imagine 10 years in four different countries. Wow. I got married during that period, got my MBA during that period, had my children during that period. Wow. And then by the time it was 2015, I was tired. So took a break in 2016, and I got used to the freedom of of being able to wake up when I want to wake up and sleep when I want to sleep. So I took a break because at every point in life, you have to have a reset.
Very true.
You have to have a reset. You have to have a reset because if you don't, you get burnt out. And then I was turning 40 in 2015.
Yeah.
And it was more of, at that time, trying to rediscover yourself, evaluate where you're coming from, where you are, and how you want things to go. And then and everybody will go through that phase when you actually don't know what you want to do next.
Wow.
Because you have, in quotes, enjoyed a very interesting career progression.
Yeah.
Yes, you had been in different countries.
Yeah.
So you're asking yourself, what should I do next?
Mm.
And everybody will go through that midlife, people call it midlife crisis, but I call it midlife opportunity to reset.
Come on, I like it.
And to rediscover yourself. So I got into the entrepreneurial journey. I wanted to do something new. I was at the Silicon Valley to attend a startup conference.
You know what's funny? Yeah. That was the exact time I went to Silicon Valley too, 2015.
Really?
Yes.
I went there May 2015.
And that changed my life totally. You know, I think mine was July.
Really?
Or August. Mine was August. And that turned me around.
Yeah, so I went there and I saw a lot of people doing very interesting and exciting stuff. I was like, geez, this could be very interesting too.
Yeah.
So I started out from consulting and then started this boutique consulting firm called Silver Rock. Did a couple of projects. Did some projects in Cameroon, in Tanzania, Equatorial Guinea, Eswatini. Eswatini is former Swaziland.
Okay.
So Eswatini, Ivory Coast, and a few stuff, which was quite interesting. And then I did this media thingy called TV Anywhere, which I co-founded with my friends, because we were trying to solve this whole problem of content distribution in Africa.
Yeah.
Because the African movie industry or content industry, we have invested a lot in upstream production, but nobody has invested in the downstream distribution.
That's
so
true.
That's the story of Africa, by the way. We get raw materials, we export it, and then we import it.
Netflix, Amazon Prime.
Exactly.
Nobody's doing distribution.
So that's my story. Last year, I started this consulting thing in Nigeria because I really wanted to come back to Nigeria after being away for a while.
So since 2015?
Since 2007, I haven't lived and worked in Nigeria until now.
No, but from 2015, when you started your entrepreneurial journey.
Yes.
You didn't get back to professional work?
I didn't get back.
Wow. Until now?
Until now.
Ooh.
Until now.
Wow.
Until now.
So why did you pick up this Nine Mobile job?
Okay, so why did I pick up the Nine Mobile job?
By the way, congratulations. CEO Nine Mobile, that's no joke.
Thank you.
Nine Mobile is the third or fourth?
Fourth.
Fourth,
yes.
You know, telco in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So congrats. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. Well, at at the beginning, after COVID,
yes,
I started having this desire to be back in Nigeria.
Wow.
And in as much as I wasn't so clear exactly what I was coming to do,
mm-hmm.
but I did start a media tech venture here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was still shuttling between Ghana and Nigeria, where my former business head office was.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2023, I knew that I have to, if I really want to do something in Nigeria, I have to move to Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So I shut down my apartment in Ghana and then moved to Nigeria. Of course, I decided to basically explore. I was still shuttling Ghana, Nigeria, and the US.
Yeah.
And then, fortunately, I was approached by a senior colleague that, hey, there's an opportunity to do something for Nine Mobile.
Okay. And then consulting
at the time. So, but when we looked at the business, we saw a business that had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And then, but a business that has not really, let me use the word,
maximize
that potential.
Yeah.
So this, the opportunity given to me by the investors to mm-hmm. take up this job, and I'm quite grateful for it,
mm-hmm.
Because it's an opportunity to effectively help a company come back from non-performance
mm-hmm.
into a company that can at least regain his foothold within the Nigerian telecom space.
Well, surprised with the Etisalat exit. You know, some people attributed it to even part of the UAE-Nigeria crisis that they were pressured at. I mean, you may not know more of that, but what has that cost the company in terms of the exit of Etisalat?
And I do not fully know the full story of how Etisalat exited.
Okay.
But, you know, Nigeria is a very big telecom market.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nigeria had MTN, market leader. You had, at that time, I think it was Airtel. Airtel has come in, just recently came in, or maybe it was Zain. Sorry, it was Zain at that time Etisalat was coming in. So in every market, you will always need what we'll call a strong global brand that helps you to adopt global best practices that can bring an investment in into the country, because the telecom industry is highly capital intensive.
Highly
capital intensive. So the exit of Etisalat meant that Nine Mobile, Etisalat then, EMTS, then had to get in another core investor who can bring in capital.
Okay.
Those can either be Nigerian investors that want to put resources together to be able to invest, but they have to understand that this is a long-term capital intensive, or you get a global brand that can come into the country. But given the fact that the macroeconomic situation in Nigeria has also not been very encouraging, I guess it was very difficult to find a global investor. Who want to come in. Like Orange was thinking of coming here at the point. Some people actually thought Vodafone was going to come here. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation that goes on in the market. But for every global brand that wants to get into a country, he has to understand what is the dynamics in that market.
Yeah.
And you're coming in to buy a number four business, which means that you're going to invest a lot of money. So they have to
try and become
No global brand wants to come here to become
remain number four.
So it means that they have to ask themselves to say, are we going to have the patience to be able to nurture this?
But do you know why Etisalat left?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, but I believe that, the company I was working for, Millicom exited Africa completely because they believed that Africa was not priority for them in their growth strategy.
Okay.
And they were getting a lot more traction in Latin America.
Wow.
And Latin America was our biggest market at the time, even while I was at Millicom. I had been to some of the Latin American operations a couple of times. So the business moved his regional office into Miami, actually global head office to Miami, because Latin America was a big market.
Yeah.
So every executive within or shareholder have to ask themselves, where do we really want to put in our resources? Where do we think we have the capacity to multiply those resources? There is no investor that invests in a market because of charity. Everybody wants to invest for growth. You want to invest so that you can get your money back. So you have to ask yourself, do we have enough resources in order to be able to maximize the potential in the market? Don't get me wrong, Nigeria is still a very big market. Nigeria is going to be 400 million people over the next 20 years. That is a huge market.
Some people argue half a billion.
So that makes us the third largest country in the world. So we have to ask ourselves, how are we going to feed these people? How are we going to educate the children from this? How you? What kind of broadband infrastructure are you going to put in place to power 400 million people economy? What kind of transportation network are we going to put in place as a country? And in your industry, what kind of real estate or housing are we going to put in place? Because even right now with 200 million people, we have one
the very high housing deficit.
So in our sector too, we have to ask ourselves, when everybody gets on that broadband infrastructure, they want to use the internet, do you really have the infrastructure to be able to power that, support that? So that is where the opportunity lies. And then the investors, the new investors in iMobile, they are very serious people who are Nigerians. And then they are very, very interested in driving growth in the market. And then we believe that we can then turn it around. So that's why I took it.
Let's go. Go, iMobile. Is there a possibility of changing the name again? Because you guys...
No, we've only had one chain name change. Come on. Everybody always confuses this with Econet and V-Mobile and SLTel Zain.
It was Airtel that changed their name multiple times.
So
it was from day one at Etisalat.
Yes.
And then the only change was iMobile.
Yes.
Is there a plan for a second change?
The name of the company is Emerging Market Telecommunication Services Limited. So that name hasn't changed, right?
Okay.
But the brand name was Etisalat.
Yes.
But when Etisalat left, of course, you have to change the brand name. Mm-hmm. And then the guys who did that change did a very, very brilliant thing, by the way, of capitalizing on the old Nigerian-ness. And then the green and stuff and like that. So they were quite brilliant. I remember that my former boss in V-Mobile at the time, Mr. Boye, he was the CEO at the time when that change happened. Okay. And then when I listened to the race, the way they did that change, the guys didn't even know what to do because they had a very short time to do it.
They
put themselves in a war room and they were able to come up with a name. So I think, aside from a name change, it's a promise of a brand.
Will you change the name? You are being political.
I won't be able to answer that question now. I was trying to say to you that, the key thing is really the promise of a brand.
Guys, I think he will change the name. Just
the promise of a brand. What is going to be that value proposition? What is our value proposition in the market? What's the promise of a brand? And we want to make sure that aside from a name is... itself is not the most important. It is really your proposition to the market that's the most important. So we want to put ourselves in a position whereby we can then be able to say, this is our value proposition for the market. And that can be encapsulated in any name. And that will become the customer experience, right?
Thank you for a diplomatic answer.
That is what you learn when you have been through multiple markets.
I mean, you have operated... I mean, most apostles in the marketplace usually operate from both priest and kingly role. And first of all, will you say the body of Christ has done well in chunking out enough, people in the marketplace who really can represent the values of their faith in the marketplace?
That is a very heavy question, Mr. Stephen. Okay, so where do I start? I have a very, I would say, not a different perspective, but my views are quite simple.
Okay.
Every one of us that call herself believers or Christians, one of our primary assignments, whether in the marketplace or in our life experience, is to become an example of a believer. Right? Now, I'm not really a fan of this title, Apostle, the marketplace that a lot of people carry. But if people want to use that to sort of position what they do and what they represent, it's okay. But most importantly, beyond the title that people carry, is really, does your value system, does your life style, your work ethic, does it represent you becoming an example of someone that could be emulated?
Yes.
Right. Now, that is our assignment.
Exactly.
Our assignment is to become an example that can be emulated. A role model that can be eliminated, that can be emulated.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are in the business world, the idea is not to come and turn your office into a church.
Absolutely.
Or to turn it into...
We see a lot of that.
Or to turn it into a lunch hour fellowship and then to all those kind of things that people do. And then therefore, see, you cannot rob your employer of valuable business time in the name of religion.
Come on.
Yeah, you cannot do that. And if you do that, then you do not really deserve to be in that role. So you must ensure that the time, it is this part of the world that we really don't value time.
We don't.
And then a lot of people will work for a salary at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the Western world, where we're coming from, you clock in hours.
Exactly.
You clock in hours.
Yes.
And you don't just clock in hours for it's just making up the hours. It has to be productive hours.
Yes.
Because if those hours are not productive, at some point, your managers or your shareholders, or depending on where you are placed in the cadre, in the leadership cadre, will start asking questions, what is exactly is your value?
Yeah.
And it's not just amounts of things that activity you do. See, activity is not the same as productivity.
True.
Because you can be running 1,000 miles, but your displacement can be zero.
Mm.
Because you gotta have to produce something that is tangible, that is in line with company and objective, that will also create shareholder value.
True.
Or beyond shareholder value, I'm talking about stakeholder value. Because your stakeholder is not only just your shareholder, your customers are your stakeholders, your colleagues are your stakeholders, the community where you operate are your stakeholders. Mm. So every of us have to understand that our role is to become that example that other people can follow.
True.
Now, Jesus said one thing. He said, by this shall all men know you are my disciples, if you love.
Yes.
So again, that has been come lost in our religious life. And believe me, if I say to people, I do not consider being religious a virtue, because I think there's a lot of Nigeria is one of the most religious countries in the world, and our productivity is very, very backward. So I think it's about being an example, being able to do your job, being able to understand that when you have been given a privilege to hold a job, it is an honor to demonstrate your value.
Come on.
The problems that you solve will determine the impact that you make.
Very true.
So if you solve big problems, you will have big influence.
True.
If you solve small problems you will have small influence. Really, at the end of the day, it is about influence.
Yeah.
It is about your ability to solve problems.
Mm.
And it's about your relevance is going to be determined by the problems you solve.
Mm.
So, people looking for relevance on the job, a lot of people want to do it politically. Of course, they call it office politics and stuff like that. A lot of people will call it favor. Oh, yeah, this one day of favor, like you say in church. I will say you, pastors. Pastors. The one day of favor is better than 1,000 years of labor, right? But trust me, guys, it takes skills to sustain favor.
Come on.
Favor will open the door, but skills will keep you in the room.
Yes.
Because favor will get you a job. I would say favor has given me opportunity to be back in this market after 17 years or to be a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But the performance of the business in a couple of years will determine whether that favor will be sustained. So favor is not a man of skills, as Ecclesiastes says, but it takes skills to sustain favor.
Come on.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I once had this employee, we attended the same church. I was an ordained pastor in the same church. We're still in the office. She left me in the office and she was going for midweek service. you know, I mean, of course, I fired her. But how do we walk around, you know, because I don't even think it's the members. I think it's also the leaders not being able to balance those conversations with the members.
I think that I will start from my days in university.
Yes.
I was one of the best students in my set.
Yeah.
Electrical electronics.
Even though you pastored the
Even finish. Though I was leading a campus church.
Mm.
But one thing I would never do is to fix a campus fellowship meeting mm-hmm. at the time when people are having classes.
Mm.
And then I will restrict people from having all these departmental meetings.
Yeah.
Mondays, this yeah. one, Tuesdays, yeah. that. To not more than twice in a week.
Wow.
Because your primary assignment on in school
yes.
is to study.
Yeah.
And a lot of people miss that up because you think that your primary assignment is to serve God.
Mm-hmm.
And then you consider serving God as mm-hmm. activity.
Mm-hmm.
Activity as church ascendant.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, you are serving God when you are studying.
I like that.
You are serving God when you
like
are doing
that.
Your job,
like
as
that.
It were.
Yeah.
So there is a time for everything.
Yeah.
So there is a time for you to attend church service.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time for you not to attend church
mm-hmm.
service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a time when you have to put in your effort and your own quota depending mm-hmm. on the phase of work where your business is.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you don't go to church service on a particular time,
yeah.
you have not committed the worst sins mm. in the world. So I think people just need to understand that when you are in the marketplace,
mm.
Your first priority,
yeah.
which is really God's work,
mm.
is your responsibility to that business where you're
mm.
in.
Mm.
And then a lot of people, especially for you that mm. we were a pastor at the mm-hmm. time when mm-hmm. this person,
mm.
People think that by speaking Christianese, then they will be able to show that, oh, get favor. That reminds me of a guy, when I was living Ericsson, right? I will never forget this guy. I keep talking about him everywhere I go. This guy came for an interview in Ericsson.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what he knew about me
yeah.
or maybe, but then we used to go to university a lot to
yeah,
go do, to go talk,
yes.
The new Nigeria thing
yeah.
we were doing, motivational
yeah.
stuff that
yeah.
we were doing. And of course, so this guy came into an interview
yeah.
and we were like, okay, can you tell us about yourself? He told us about himself. I said, okay, you have found us about, I can't even remember the specific question, but there were like 10, 20 people that came for the interview.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what exactly will you consider your unique strength
mm-hmm.
that you can bring to the table on this job? The guy looked at me. He said, the joy of the Lord is my strength. So I looked at him. I was like, are you for real? So I was trying to help him because I knew that he was a church guy and every guy is done. It was 2004. He said, I knew he was a church guy. And okay, maybe this guy was trying to basically, appease me. I said, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, what can you really do? I mean, the guy doubled down. He said, I can do all things through Christ. True Christ has strengthened me. I almost fell out of my seat. That was the end of the interview. I just basically said, okay. So I don't know where that guy is today, but honestly, that guy had a chance to get that job. Perhaps he would have got himself in an interesting international telecommunication company today if he had not bungled that.
Wow.
So that is just, I never forget him. Every time I talk about him, I laugh because I still cannot get over that, you know.
I mean, so, some people quote scripture like they're reciting incantation, you know, when it comes to even where science and logic needs to play. And I'm happy we're having podcasts like this because it helps people to know that you can be a person of faith and yet be excellent in your place of work and yet rise to the highest level and use the anointing, the Holy Ghost, right, to turn the company around, not to harass, not to harass everyone, is to get productivity, get result, and not to just intimidate everyone as if, you know, you are the only one that decided to know God. For people watching this who are C-suits or want to move up to C-suits, executive of multi-billion-dollar corporations. What are the habits you think they need to pick up You know, because all of professional, you know, career people want to rise up and look up to someone like you who is at the height of their own career. You know, what are the things they need to begin to so that they can stand a chance of getting opportunities like this?
Oh, you see, I'm sighing because there is really not just one magic bullet, right?
Okay.
But the first thing I want to talk about, not in any order of priority, is really you need to know your onions. You need to know your stuff. You need to know the industry where you are playing at.
Yeah.
You need to understand the market.
Yeah.
And it's not just head knowledge.
Mm.
You have to understand the dynamics of the industry where you are playing at.
True.
So first, I would say to people who want to aspire to leadership in their career, is to know your stuff.
Mm.
Right. You need to know your stuff. You need to understand that your value to the business you intend to lead will be determined by the problems you solve for that business.
True.
And aside from knowing your stuff, you also need to learn how to be dedicated to your work. And it's not because you want to please anybody.
Yeah.
It's simply because you want to ensure that you get things done.
That makes sense.
It takes dedication to duty.
Mm-hmm.
It takes, and that's not becoming a workaholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But dedication to duty means that the things that has to be done has to be done.
Mm.
No matter how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Put in the work and get the output.
Yeah.
And when you have put in the work and you got the output, then also you can take time to rest. But if you only rest.
Mm.
And if all you do is rest, because in resisting that, people say Nigeria, I'm getting used to the new slangs Nigeria,
okay.
So I can't come and kill myself. Now people say, now, nobody's asking you to come and kill yourself.
Yes.
But if there is work to be done,
get it done.
Get it done.
Yeah.
And another thing is really relationship management, people management.
Yeah.
You can be very good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all the results in this world.
Mm.
But if you do not know how to manage the people that are working for you or working with you, you will realize that you will be working alone.
Mm.
Leadership itself is a very lonely place.
It is.
I mean, you are a billionaire. So you will know that leadership is a very lonely space.
Yeah.
It can become lonelier if you do not manage people well. You have to treat people with respect.
True.
You have to treat people with a little bit of courtesy.
Yeah.
You cannot get into the office and everybody runs for cover because you are here. You cannot be a bully and terrorize everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Because you have to understand that for everywhere you have worked, your seat is a position, right? However, your influence can be transgenerational by the relationship you build.
True.
And there are certain things you will get done, not because you are the CEO and you say, you must get this thing done by close of day tomorrow. Some people will work for you, not because of what you will give them, but because they believe in you, right?
Mm.
And then I realized that I had a boss, which I do want no one to reveal him to the public because this is a podcast.
Yeah.
And we all worked for him, not because we were being paid a lot of money.
Mm.
We worked for him because of the way he treated us.
Wow.
And I learned that a lot in my career.
Mm.
When you want people to work for you, you got to have to treat them with respect.
Mm.
Yes. The country is hard. Economies are hard. Mm-hmm. Economy has been hard even from the time when we call it just relative situation.
Very true.
But when people leave their work to come to the home, to come to the office, it takes a lot of sacrifice to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They need the money, yes,
mm-hmm.
but they also need the dignity
true.
And the respect.
True.
So, I encourage every leader. You can do it ruthlessly,
yeah,
and still get the results.
The result.
But you will get it, and by the time you are out, you will have lost a lot because you will be lonely.
Yeah.
It comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And the next thing is to understand, really, are you pursuing your passion? Are you pursuing an industry where you believe your purpose lies?
Yeah.
Someone once said, he said that the worst thing that can happen to you is to climb the topmost ladder in your career and only to find that ladder is leaning against the wrong wall.
Wow.
So you will have achieved fame, money, but you will feel empty because there is a longing in you of what you would really love to do that you were not able to do as your ladder is leaning against the wrong wall.
Wow.
So I say to people that there is passion, there is a job, and there is opportunity in the marketplace.
Mm.
So your career, the sum total of your career is an intersection between your passion, right? Your skills, and the opportunity in the marketplace.
Wow.
You can be skillful in an area that you're not passionate about.
True.
It is just, then that becomes just a job. And then you will do well with it because a job you get paid is a job, and then you just rise is a job, but your heart is not there.
Mm.
You can also be passionate in an area that you're not skillful about, skillful in, as it were.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes a hobby because you can be passionate about music and then you're not skillful around it. You have you have not found out how to build an industry around that. It's just really a hobby. But your career is an intersection between your passion, your skills, and then the last part of it is the opportunity in the marketplace.
Mm. Mm.
So you may be passionate, you may be skillful, but are you constantly doing what I call environmental scanning?
Mm.
Scanning for opportunities in the marketplace.
Wow.
Because if you don't scan for opportunities in the marketplace, you will not be aware of what is outside there.
Wow.
And then you may be passionate, you may be skillful, but that opportunity may elude you because you're just not there and you're not scanning. And how do you get opportunities? By building relationship.
Yeah.
That if you are alone and nobody knows about you, don't care about anybody, nobody's going to call you there is this opportunity. I remember this guy. Because if you're not the type that has made yourself available, nobody's going to remember you when the opportunity comes.
True.
And that's how you miss out of the opportunity in the marketplace, even though you are skilled.
True.
So, again, I can continue, but that's what I would like to say for now on those areas. Yeah.
I mean, thank you for coming. And I'm happy we're having this conversation because we hardly, for us, it was intentional to start this podcast and begin to put out this kind of information because a lot of young people aspire, but you know, like we say, they don't see the step-by-step process. You know, there's a part of success for a lot of Nigerians where they just keep it to now God, grace. You know, you knew how they got to a point, but from one point to the next one, just keep it to God, grace, right?
Yeah.
And I even have a content out there where I was explaining. I said the reason is because most Nigerians' growth were really at the top. It's not organic.
Yeah.
So they are not able to really break down step by step how they got to where they are. And because it wasn't organic, a lot of what happened behind the scene, they don't want people to know because even the people involved don't want them to tell. For example, I knew a governor that helped me to get certain contract and boom, I'm a billionaire. Or I knew a senator, or I knew the president that gave me certain licenses. Boom. You know? So that's typically it. So I can't tell you that it was this that happened, then the governor did this, you know, because it's not. So we felt we needed to have a podcast that is able to bring people who grew rank the ranks organically, who moved to the top. So that Nigerians can start saying, generally Africans and people all over the world can see that, yes, not you can get favor, but it can also be organic.
It can also
be organic. And these are the processes for it to be organic. Because not all of us would be opportune to meet some governors, some senators, some politicians, some, you know, some of us will have to go step by step. And people like you, your journey is able to help people understand that. My last question to you is that why do you think...
To just contribute to that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the proverbs that says, if you see a man that is diligent in his work,
it shall stand before kings
and not before mere men. Now, for every young person that is listening to hear, even our peers are listening to this, diligence will help you stand before kings.
Very true.
And the other thing I was going to say is the aspect of people not telling their story.
Yeah.
You would not be able to tell your full story to everybody.
True.
And it is not everybody that you are called to mentor.
True. Absolutely.
For the people that you are not called to mentor, they will get general gist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Like Jesus will speak to the multitude.
Yes.
But he will bring his disciples close and they say, okay, this is how it works. Right?
I like that.
Now, it takes a lot to be vulnerable.
Yes, it takes a lot.
To tell your story.
It takes a lot.
And you will do it to your inner caucus.
True.
For those who want to learn.
Yeah.
And not those who just want to take your story to create a viral news in order to create a headline. Now, because I say people want to make headlines, but not so many people want to make impacts, right? Now, so, and again, there are certain things that are very sensitive. Nigeria is a country where people make a lot from opportunities that are given to them.
Yes.
Now, Nigeria is also a country where, honestly, anything can happen to anybody because of the association he has.
That's true.
It is like the US
as
well.
True.
The US is also full of, it's a capitalist
market.
Yes. But the thing about Nigeria is that there are certain deals that people have that they're not proud to talk about.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because of the security implication of some of those things or some of those things. So, again, that's why they're not able to tell the story. Mm-hmm. So people will say it's grace, or people will say it's just that God.
My God.
Yes. God will make the sun to shine upon everybody.
Exactly.
But for those who really want to grow organically, there's going to be grace as well.
That's true.
There's going to be favor as
that's
well.
That's true.
It's not everything that will be attributed to your hard work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but not everything can be excluded.
Yes.
Not everything will exclude your hard work. Your hard
absolutely.
Work will always come into the place.
Yes.
And favor will come.
Hard work is not substitute for favor.
It's not.
And favor is not substitute for hard work.
Both work in hand. You just put
together.
It right.
Yeah,
that's
why do you
say.
Think positions like yours are not often given to Black people? So a lot of these telcos, even when they started, was a lot of white people that were CEOs. And, recent time, of course, things are changing. And why do you think a few people like yours were eventually allowed to run big telcos or big multinationals?
I would say that Black executives are everywhere in the world.
Yes.
Even in the US, where we have a base.
Way more
also
non-blacks.
Now, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And it's easier. And of course, I know this is public.
Yeah.
This is a podcast. Sometimes multinationals bring in, I would say, foreigners into a country.
Mm-hmm. By the way, nothing's wrong with it.
Nothing's wrong with that.
Yes.
No, nothing's wrong with
yes.
that. However, when you come into a country as a foreigner, you can be very objective about the situation you are facing.
And not be emotional.
Will not be emotional around it. Secondly, it also helps to insulate the organization.
Mm.
Because at the top, you don't have a lot of time to waste.
Mm.
That means that when you are deploying your relationship capital, you have to deploy it in deliberately in areas and sectors that can help the business.
True.
And then there will be less distraction because you do not have so many entanglements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would not necessarily say it's because foreign companies do not want Blacks or Nigerians. I mean, I was a Black man when I was in Tanzania.
True.
Yeah, I was a Black man when I went to Ghana, right?
Yeah.
So I was given an opportunity to lead in those places, even though I'm Black, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would say that because at certain levels, see, if the people that are bringing money into an economy is European or Chinese or Indian,
it's fair for them to say.
Aside from that, it's about trust as well.
Trust,
it's about trust. Not because they don't trust us, but trust is earned.
Yes, absolutely.
Trust is based on relationship.
Yeah.
So I would say that I think that it is time for a lot of us in Africa too to invest in our people, to develop our people, and also to educate and train people that you can trust. Because trust is a currency that is earned. Right. So
and
it's scarce at the highest level, as it were. Because, see, shareholders don't know the business much more than some shareholders, many shareholders, let me not generalize. A lot of shareholders will have to trust the executive they are putting in place.
Yeah.
Because that person would decide or determine whether their money will come back to them
or not.
Or their money will never come back to them. Right. So this is always a delicate balance. So I would say that in our market, not only in the telecom sectors, in the telecom sectors, a lot of us that got the opportunity to get trained early, had the opportunity to rise. And there are companies that are very, very deliberate about training. And I would say black executives. And MTN is one of those, as a matter of fact. MTN did a lot of job in doing that. And I think Celtel, Mo Ibrahim, was also one of those visionary leaders in Africa that trained a lot of telecom execs in his time before he sold the company. Now, so there are people who have done that, who are still developing people. I would say that for those of us who are just coming into the system, in the leadership, at least at the CEO level, we also have to be deliberate about training and building the next generation.
True.
Because if you don't invest in those young generational skills, 20 years down the line, you will not get the business leaders.
Very true.
Now, some people invested in us when we were starting out 25 years ago.
True.
Now, we had the opportunity to get to where we are. So we got to have to do that as well. And that's one of the things that I intend to do in Nine Mobile as well.
Good.
And for those, even though this is not supposed to be a commercial, but I know that a lot of subscribers out there who are ported from Nine Mobile because we have not been able to deliver good quality service.
Yeah.
That we will invest in the business to bring the business back to Reckoning.
Okay.
So that means that...
what timeline should we give you?
Watch out for us in 2025.
Okay.
We will be coming back and then we will be, of course, appealing to every one of you guys that are ported to come back. But and we will let you know when our progress, we will let you know the strides we are making in the market.
Okay.
But we want to invest not only in our network, we want to invest in people.
Yeah.
We also want to invest in specific sector and position ourselves as an enabler of specific sectors.
Okay.
And I'm being guarded in my word now because I know it's hard there.
Okay.
But the reality is that we must invest in our country. We must invest in our people. And that is how we develop the next generation of business leaders or industry leaders that will lead Nigeria out. I'm very passionate about Nigeria. And I've not worked and lived there for almost 17 years. For me, it's a privilege to come back and to play my home part in
and
developing and give back and develop the next generation of leaders.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this podcast is sponsored by Nine Mobile. I will send them my email.
We will give you a voucher. We'll give you a credit voucher.
I'll send them my invoice. Now that the CEO has done advance, so we'll just send the invoice. Don't worry. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Thank you.
You know, it's been a wonderful time.
Thank you very much.
You know, guys, it's the end of another beautiful episode of the Billionaire Habit Podcast. You know, see you at the top. Love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.